That because of the war.
May I see, please? Thank you. Right, my name is John Paul. I'm senior judge. I've been assigned to hear this case with Honorable Judge Overhorn. Call the case for cause number 06-0085857, Brimball versus Judges Banner and Chapman. What says the movement on the motion plea to the jurisdiction?
Good morning, Your Honor. Jason Contreras on behalf of Judges Banner and Chapman.
Thank you, sir. Sir, would you like to make an announcement?
Yes. My name is Uta Bumbum, and I don't know if there's any witnesses going to be in the courtroom, and if they're going to be, I'd ask they're going to be put under the rule.
All right, sir. Are there witnesses in the courtroom?
Your Honor, I do have my client, Judge Banner, but as I'm sure the court is aware, he's entitled to sit in on this hearing.
All right, sir. So noted. Any additional witnesses other than the parties?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. Oh, I guess Mr. Birnbaum's guest.
Yeah, that's mine. That's a little old lady. I'm not related to her.
Is she a witness, sir?
No, sir.
I wasn't sure.
Desire to make an opening statement.
Yes, Your Honor. This plea that I file on behalf of Judges Chapman and Birnbaum is based on judicial immunity. I'm not sure how much in detail the court wants background information, as it's already been set forth in the Section 1 of the plea.
My court indicates to the parties I have reviewed the file, I have read all the pleas, and I've read the briefs, and I appreciate the briefing, and I'll be glad to consider whatever you want me to consider.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I would indicate I have read the plea.
Thank you, Judge. Given that the court has reviewed the pleading, I'm sure the court is well aware of the standard here for affirmative defense of judicial immunity. The factors have been met in this case for both judges, Banner and Chapman. Just a few comments regarding the standard. All the activities in which Mr. Birnbaum is complaining against the judges occurred within their judicial capacities. There's no dispute about that.
Yes, sir. I'll let him hear it, and I'll be glad to fully allow you to develop your position. And I'll allow to break it down as to each and every individual issue. So I proceed then on the.
Thank you, Judge.
Assuming you're going forward on jurisdiction this time?
That's correct, Your Honor. The bottom line here is that the state of Texas, as many other states, probably all states, have this doctrine of judicial immunity. Based on policy reasons of protecting judges from being harassed by frivolous lawsuits, for the simple reason that parties to a lawsuit may not like the judge's ruling and may not like the court order. But that is of no consequence, and that's why we want to protect our judges under Texas law from these types of lawsuits. If a party was able to bring a lawsuit against a judge every time party didn't like a court's ruling or order, it would be a disservice to the public, be a disservice to the Texas court system, and it would clog the courts with further needless litigation and take time away from litigating cases that are more meritorious and should be litigated properly. Under the standard, once again, just to go back, Mr. Birnbaum cannot dispute that these types of orders and judgments that he's challenging are normal judicial activities. There's no question about that. That cannot be disputed.
Sir, would you like to dispute this?
I dispute that, sir, completely.
This is not.
The facts don't bear out any of the things that he's saying. I don't want to get into my whole thing, but the facts don't bear it out. There wasn't even a case in there at the time.
I think he's presenting matters of law. Now, are you disputing the matter of law that judges have judicial immunity for their beliefs?
No, sir.
So that's not an issue?
That's not an issue at all.
Do you appreciate that?
Thank you, Your Honor. And that's clearly one of the elements of judicial immunity. And even based upon Mr. Birnbaum's petition, in which he is attached, he attached a final judgment, and he also attached, I believe it was an order for sanctions. He has made no other reference to any other acts but other than these, in which, once again, are normal judicial activities.
Mr. Birnbaum, do you dispute that?
Yes, sir.
He's what saying, allegations have you made other than these judges ruling because you're wrong?
Basically, that they violated the law. That they're retaliating for exercising a First Amendment right, that they put a punitive sanction on by civil process, which violates the 4th and the 14th, and that the things that I'm complaining about in this particular case were not judicial. They were administrative, if anything.
Right, sir. Do you draw any distinction between personal and subject matter jurisdiction?
Person meaning me?
Person meaning the...
Or the judge.
Personally, as opposed to the subject matter jurisdiction of the action that you complain about.
I'm getting him personally. I'm saying that the thing that he...
You'll understand what I'm talking about. But you're still... Your claim is that these judges, by entering a ruling... violated you in some manner?
No.
All right. Would you please state what your complaint is? I've read your pleadings and I can't determine what your complaint is.
I have a real short introductory. You want me to go into it?
No, sir. I want you to answer my question. What's your complaint? Let's get to the bottom.
My complaint is that what these judges did was unlawful.
Did you have a right to appeal what they did?
No, sir.
You didn't have a right to appeal.
No.
Why did they block your right to appeal?
There was no case in the court.
You had no right to appeal their judgment? Is that what you're telling me?
There was no case in the court. The final judgment was entered 2 years before that, Your Honor. I can't appeal on that twice. All this thing that we're talking about happened 2 years after final judgment and 4 years after final judgment, and we're still in it 9 years after this, 7 years after this. There was no case in there. Sir, if you look at the final judgment that was entered in July of 2002, signed by Judge Bannon, after final judgment,
does it have a case number?
It's attached to my pleading.
Yes, sir. And in reviewing your pleadings, it appears it has a case number. 00619. Yes, sir. So it was part of that case, then. Isn't that correct?
No, sir. No longer.
Why do you say it's no longer?
Because the final judgment had been entered in 2002. And this sanction that Judge Chapman put on was in 2004, signed in 2006. Therein lies the key, Your Honor. There was no case in the court. It appears to be a case. Anybody looking at it bears against me. It'll deter anybody from doing what I'm doing. It offends the First Amendment. That's the issue, Your Honor.
So you're saying the action did not occur in the courtroom? Not occur under case number.
That's not the fair question, Your Honor. The question is whether what these judges did was unlawful. Harlow says they're not. A judge is entitled to while he's adjudicating and other things, but not for violating the clearly established laws like the First Amendment. He has no immunity.
Right. So you're not contesting the law on.
I'm not contesting any law. I'm contesting the application of the law of immunity to the facts of the case. And the facts of the case are that there was no case in there. There was no law to apply to. I don't doubt that these men are judges. In fact, one of the judges didn't even swear that there's been no evidence presented in any of the affidavits or even your motion regarding the facts that I'm pleading.
If I may, Your Honor, Mr. Burr-
did not plead a First Amendment claim in this lawsuit. If he had done that, we would have removed it to federal court ASAP. There's no claim of First Amendment. What he alleged, which he has alleged before in these types of lawsuits, is a RICO claim. So he can't stand up here today and say, well, you're violating my First Amendment right to free speech or right to exercise my opinion by filing these frivolous lawsuits. Additionally, Your Honor, Mr. Birnbaum, and the cases cited in the plea, he did in fact appeal the final judgment, I believe, and the case is, came right out of the Dallas Court of Appeals, Birnbaum versus the Law Offices of G. David Munch. Unless I'm mistaken, unless that's another one of the lawsuits he's got going on, he addressed all this stuff, or he could have addressed it in his appeal. And there is, this is a written opinion from the Dallas Court of Appeals. What this lawsuit essentially is, Your Honor, it's an impermissible and improper collateral attack on judgments that happened years ago. Additionally, Your Honor, this hate that I'm hearing from Mr. Birnbaum about the fact that the final judgment was entered first and then there was a sanction order, that does not serve as a bar to the application of judicial immunity. And Mr. Birnbaum hasn't cited me one case that makes in support of that proposition that, well, the court didn't have jurisdiction to issue the order on sanctions, and therefore the Judges Chapman and Judge Spanner are not entitled to judicial immunity. That is just utter nonsense, and it has absolutely no bearing and no consequence to the application of judicial immunity here. And he's already conceded that, without question, Judges Spanner and Judge Chapman were acting within their normal judicial capacity, that these acts occurred, the rulings and orders by the honorable judges took place in either the courtroom or in their chambers. Whether the controversy centered around a case pending before the judges, and whether the act arose out of a visit to the judge in his in their judicial capacity. These are all elements of judicial immunity that clearly apply here, Your Honor. And I'm not hearing anything from Mr. Birnbaum that could remotely even come close to possibly overcoming the application of judicial immunity here. This is nothing, once again, but another collateral attack. This entire lawsuit is harassing. These judges need to be left alone. How many more years are we going to go through more lawsuits by Mr. Birnbaum based on some frivolous RICO claim and these vague, generalized allegations of First Amendment violations?
Judge, I'm not. He said it right. If I would have filed a civil rights suit, this is not a civil rights suit.
What kind of suit is it?
It's a civil RICO suit, Your Honor.
Civil RICO suit.
Have you ever heard of those before?
Sure have. You're alleging that someone committed a crime of racketeering against you, and
alleged
that the court was the means of this racketeering incident. Now, is that what you believe?
No, I'm not saying the court was the means. It was the enterprise that was misused.
On 19, you say the 294th District Court of Van Zandt County is an enterprise under RICO. Do you really believe that this court is part of a criminal action?
Judge, you don't understand RICO, I believe. The enterprise
How
is...
How did you educate me on RICO, then? How
does yes,
the court
sir. Yes, sir.
A part of a criminal enterprise?
Yes, sir. Just a minute. Well, first of all, we all agree that a civil RICO claim is a lawsuit brought upon violations of laws. We all agree on that?
I'm listening.
Any objection to that? That a civil RICO claim is injury by reason of the violation of RICO.
That's what you're alleging.
Is that what RICO is? Remember, any person injured by reason, 18 U.S. 1964C, it's for violation of RICO. A civil RICO case inherently is a civil proceeding, I think the only one, where you can bring a civil suit on the violation of a criminal statute. That makes it different. So it's inherently a complaint of crimes.
Do you have any authority to indicate a court is a criminal enterprise?
No, sir. I did not say it was a criminal enterprise.
Did you plead that on page 4?
No. Well,
paragraph 19 of your own plea?
Phrase your question, Your Honor.
No, sir. I'm asking you, didn't you plead that?
Did I plead what?
that the 294th District Court of Van Zandt County is an enterprise under RICO.
Yes, sir.
A criminal enterprise.
No, sir. That does not make an enterprise. That is your words, Your Honor.
All right, so what is your
and it, simple, RICO is about the misuse of proper, important enterprises. And what could be more important than the 294th?
Do you have any case authority to indicate a court can be a criminal enterprise under RICO?
Judge, you keep saying a criminal enterprise. No, it is not a criminal enterprise. Judge, let me give you the instructions here that have the jury instructions, and that's what I learned out of, and somebody's going to have to learn out of the jury instructions. Here,
you must ask permission to approach.
May I approach?
Yes, sir.
First, okay, here is the, here are the 11th Circuit jury instructions for a RICO, civil RICO, and explains it in detail enough for a jury to understand, and a court and an attorney who should understand it. Let me correct that. Here, the additional one from the Fifth Circuit. We're on the Fifth Circuit. They're more difficult to understand, Your Honor. But it's all in there. Let me finish up on the criminal part of the stuff here. What I said, may I approach the bench?
Yes, sir.
This was put forward to all the judges, including to Judge Banner. I believe it mentions him, having knew that I have a criminal complaint in. Your Honor, that was those complaints were made and distributed to the parties before you were on the case.
What's the purpose of this?
A criminal complaint.
The U.S. Attorney's Office?
Yes, sir.
Is there a criminal action pending?
I don't know. They don't tell you. That does not keep you from putting in a complaint. I just want you to be aware that there is a criminal complaint in on the stuff, since you raised the matter of whether I allege that this court is a criminal enterprise. No, I furthest thing from that, Your Honor.
What are you trying to do? Intimidate me with this?
No, sir. That was way before you.
I understand that. Why is it important?
Because you asked about the issue of criminal. You were saying whether I was asking the court was a criminal.
I didn't ask you about that. I asked you, did you indicate this court was an enterprise under RICO?
Then you added something to that after that. Sorry.
May
continue, sir. Well, I forget where we were.
If I may, Your Honor, please respond. Birnbaum has presented these jury questions. I'm not exactly what they are. I haven't seen them. What talking about here, but the bottom line is we're not in criminal court. There may be a criminal RICO statute out there somewhere that applies against criminal defendants, but we're certainly not in criminal court. We're sitting here in civil court, and he's trying to bring a civil RICO claim, not a criminal RICO claim, if there is a distinction. I don't know, but I do know that we're not sitting in criminal court. So I don't see how that has any bearing on these proceedings in this civil lawsuit.
Birnbaum, what's your bottom line? What are you requesting?
Let me answer that one.
What's the bottom line about this?
It's a lawsuit that I filed, and I complain of the words in my petition of effectively these judges retaliating, a pattern of retaliation, for having exercised a First Amendment right.
What are you asking the court to do?
Set it to trial.
What are you asking it to trial?
The injury that I had, that flowed from this.
And what was your injury?
The sanctions.
All right, so you're in effect asking this court to overrule the previous sanction?
No, sir. No, sir.
What are you asking the court to
to compensate me for what they did.
And their action was issuing a sanction order against you.
Well, it wasn't just the sanction. It was the events leading to the sanctions, and the events after the sanctions, including Judge Chapman signing the thing in 2006, finding me delusional in the head. I told you, Your Honor, there was no case in there I could appeal on. There was no case in there.
So the answer is no, you did not appeal.
I cannot appeal, Your Honor.
Who told you appeal?
There was no case in there. Your Honor, I tried it.
Oh, so you did appeal. Is that correct?
Yeah, but I have other remedies than that.
So these orders were issued and appealed by you.
One of the orders, not the second one.
So you let the second one ripen as an operation of law, making it a final order. Is that correct?
Your Honor, what do you think the chances are of me coming into the Supreme Court 6 years later says, oops, they did some more and I need to get back in there? Let's put some reality on this. What this has to do with is First Amendment rights, the right to bring a lawsuit and not to be retaliated against.
Have you alleged that in your pleadings?
Yes, sir.
Where did you allege First Amendment?
Where did I allege what?
The First Amendment rights.
I have First Amendment rights scattered through all through my pleading. No. Let me settle down and do this in an ordinary manner. All right. Ever after, this is in page 2 of the pleading, ever after April 1, the defendants came together to use a dead case in the 294th District Court, final judgment issued in 2002. Chapman knew that the pronouncement of the sanctions against Belmont was not proper, as by his death then falling through with an order. Chapman hiding is wrong.
First Amendment at this point. Additionally, Your Honor, case law from the U.S. Supreme Court in Morales versus Waco specifically states that it makes no difference what specific causes of action are brought. Mr. Burbank could have brought a First Amendment claim, a RICO claim, a tort claim, a negligence claim, whatever he wanted. It still doesn't matter because the case law holds that it makes no difference what cause of action you're bringing against the judge. Judicial immunity dictates that a judge is immune from being sued at all. That's where we're at. Mr. Birnbaum's done.
Your Honor, I agree with the law. A judge is immune from all lawsuits of any kind while he is adjudicating. He is clearly not immune while he's administrating or while he's breaking the law.
How have you alleged any administrative acts?
That said, they came together at a hearing for a recusal. There was no case. Just because you're in the Forrester and White, Supreme Court is clear. I can get into the law in just a minute. It's the function that he's performing, adjudication. He's absolutely immune for adjudication, but he's not for magistrate, administrative things. That was strictly an administrative hearing, and he had no authority to do anything else other than to decide the recusal hearing.
What do you define as an administrative hearing?
When you're assigned to a recusal hearing.
That's not a judicial hearing?
No, it's an administrative hearing. It's not an adjudicative. He is not acting in his judicial capacity, Your Honor. No, sir, he isn't.
Your Honor, Mr. Birnbaum is incorrect. An order or a judgment, whatever you want to call it, is a judicial act. That's a judicial act. It's not administrative. It's not ministerial. And even if it was ministerial, a case on hold, Texas Supreme Court, Turner versus Pruitt, it's on page 5 of my opinion, held that the judge is immune whether the act was judicial or ministerial, period. So that's another road that he's gone down that makes no sense and has no application here. It doesn't matter. It's of no consequence, and it's neither here nor there.
Need to take the time. I've quoted one from the Supreme Court and one from, and he's gotten a copy of it, one from the Texas Supreme Court. It essentially involved Judge Overt assigning a particular judge, and I do believe it involved Judge Banner, in fact, indirectly somehow. But it had to do with what the function was that the judge was doing that was doing the administrative recusal hearing. And the Texas Supreme Court, and I have it in one of my responses, if we can get to back some sort of order in this, that the Texas Supreme Court ruled that all the judge was doing was the same thing that Judge Overt was entitled to do. It stated point blank, assigning a judge is administrative, and when he assigned him to do that, all he assigned him was the right to do what he was doing. A recusal hearing is strictly administrative, Your Honor.
I'd like to see that case and indication.
Yes, sir. Give me the time and let's do this in an order, okay? It is in one of my last two responses to you. It's at the very front.
So you can see if he was acting in judicial capacity, you have no case. Is that what you're hearing? But you're saying
if he is in an adjudicative capacity, if he's acting in a judicial capacity, he is absolutely immune from suit. Other types, he can assume, he can still claim official immunity, qualified immunity, whatever you want to call it, but not absolute immunity.
And you're saying a refusal hearing is not a judicial proceeding, it's an administrative proceeding.
I'm not saying it's not a judicial proceeding. I'm saying it's administrative. It is not adjudicative. He is not adjudicating.
And you're saying judges have no immunity in a refusal proceeding?
Yes, they do. They have qualified immunity. But not absolute.
I'd like to see some authority for that.
It's in all my documents. If you read them, give me a chance to find them, Your Honor. It's in the last responses. I have it in there, Judge. You couldn't have caught it in that short time. I've been working on this long. It's in there. All right. Let me look at the one that it has a date on it of August 12. And I think this is the one we probably ought to be arguing because this was my response to the plea to the jurisdiction. All right. If you will look in there, have you seen this? Have you looked at this, Your Honor?
Yes, sir.
All right. The case, first of all, everything has to be based on the facts. You apply the law to the facts. So what are the facts? There's lots of law out there, but what are the facts? And the facts are stated out over here. It says, on page 1, the bottom, it says, all other relief, this is the final judgment, all other relief not expressly granted in this order is hereby denied. Boom, that's in 2002, final judgment. Should have been the end of it. Then we have the next one over here by Ron Chapman, signed in 2006. You see that on the bottom, underlined 2006? On April 2004, came to be heard. All right? Doesn't that strike you kind of strange? That in 4 years later, he signed something where he... All right? Then
been exhausted at that time?
Hmm?
At
206?
Yes, sir.
What appeal? To what case? There wasn't any case in there.
Whatever appeal you filed. This
came after that. This came after that.
I see you filed it in 2004.
Yeah, this was...
So apparently the Supreme Court acted on it sometime after 2004.
Yeah, about 205. But it's obvious the Supreme Court didn't get this big old sanction. completely different matter, Your Honor. Listen to this. These are punitive fines sought by the court. That's what this says. Sought by the court to stop me and others. Judge, that's First Amendment retaliation right there.
Now, let me ask you this. Did you appeal this order? What you're complaining about?
There wasn't any case in there, Your Honor.
So you didn't appeal it?
Well, the strict answer is no, I didn't appeal it.
Right, so it became fine.
So what? That doesn't affect whether there was a crime committed. I'm complaining about crimes. I'm filing this under RICO, completely different cause of action.
A criminal action.
What?
You realize that it's a crime committed, you need to take it to your district attorney.
No, sir. I do not need to. The Supreme Court in Rotella versus Wood encourages people to become private attorney generals and file. Sorry. Yeah, let me start that over. I'm not... What was the question?
Well, if you didn't appeal, you said you don't have to appeal a crime. And I was asking, did you file with the district attorney? You indicated you didn't, that you're acting civilly to seek criminal redress.
Let me make a point of really slowing down. I intended to slow down. I had in the past complained to the district attorney on various things. It doesn't work. The Supreme Court in Rotella versus Wood tells people that the way to solve things is to turn victims into private attorney generals filing civil RICO suits.
Who told you to do that?
Sandra Day O'Connor in the Supreme Court in Rotella versus Wood. I've got it in here somewhere. The purpose of civil RICO, stating that it does not have any longer than a 4-year statute of limitation, is to encourage you quickly to file civil RICO suits to assist the government in deterring the prohibited conduct, and that's exactly what I'm doing.
So your suit is RICO total?
My suit is RICO total. And to correct what I said, I believe there's no mention of First Amendment in the petition itself, because it's not a First Amendment. What my suit is upon is injury by violation of RICO. And the violation of RICO, it's got to have the enterprise, it's got to have all sorts of things. But essentially what it is upon a scheme to deprive the state of Texas of the honest services of these gentlemen. Are you familiar with the Blagojevich Count 1 indictment? It indicts him for depriving the state of Illinois of the honest services of Rod Blagojevich. That's a criminal indictment. And what I'm alleging is a scheme to defraud the state of Texas by a pattern that I'm showing, and that's why I filed a RICO.
With the U.S. attorney.
I have that.
You handed you?
Yeah, I have that right.
All right. So you have sought redress with U.S. attorney. Now you're seeking some type of redress in this civil action.
Yes, sir.
And the redress you're seeking is to have previous final judgments set aside.
No, sir.
And what are you seeking?
I'm seeking compensation for the damage, the injury that they did to me with those things. If they want to set them aside, that could be negotiated.
Right. Anything else you want to hear?
I do want to get into making my prepared pitch. We can get at the individual laws. At issue in this case are these huge sanctions, I call them huge, imposed, and the circumstances leading up to them, the conduct of the judges, conduct of various parties. RICO is all about conduct.
And you're referring to, from my information, what you say is Exhibits A and B, the two sanction
orders.
That's what you're calling the new sanctions?
I won't refer to the A and B. I'm referring to one of the sanctions, which was about $62,000, and the other one's $125,000. only one is attached to the pleading.
Both of them were signed by the respective judges that you have complained against.
Yes, sir. So that's what that issue. They're claiming absolute judicial immunity. I'm claiming, I'm filed it as a civil RICO suit, a scheme to deprive the state of Texas of honest services by, among other things, as it's developed. Retaliation, due process, and I already mentioned Rotella versus Wood, that the Supreme Court encourages people to become private attorney generals to stop that kind of conduct. Forrester and White is also a Supreme Court decision that I have in here and is detailed more, and it essentially says the absolute immunity depends on the function that the judge was performing, whether it was adjudication at the time. It makes the clear distinction of distinguishing that from administrative, ministerial, ceremonial, other things. So there is Forrester that has to do, that he's only entitled to any government official, absolute, well, a judge, when he's adjudicating. So we have the test of Forrester, whether the acts complained of constituted adjudication. The other law that's in there is Harlow versus Fitzgerald, and there's another one, Nixon versus Fitzgerald, that came out of the Watergate with the president claiming absolute immunity. And Harlow essentially says there are government officials, anybody, is immune unless they violate clearly established constitutional or statutory rights. I'm claiming they violated clearly established constitutional and statutory rights.
What right are you claiming?
Okay. All right. The right, let me, just a minute. I'm going to answer your question and then go back. The right I'm claiming that they violated was, one, punishment for exercising a First Amendment right of access to the courts. Two, a punitive sanction, rather than coercive, a punitive sanction. These are punitive sanctions. The judge says so. They say so. A punitive sanction imposed by civil process. You can't do that. That's a violation of due process. You cannot impose a where you do not have the keys to your own release. You cannot. He can lock me up until I testify, do whatever, but he cannot unconditionally punish me for past conduct. So I'm saying it's unlawful that it violated due process, an unconditional fine. The Supreme Court and other things have said any fine, even as low as $50, you've got to have the keys to your own release. I have no keys to my own release. Pay it. So it's unlawful. It's imposed by civil process. And the second thing, all this thing we're talking about, these guys are playing, when you look at the words very carefully, like this sanction here, it was another jury trial. Heck no, it wasn't a jury trial. They're trying to cover up that this was a jury case, and they heard this stuff and made this decision all themselves. The key stuff is this, Your Honor. Judge Banner got caught by the court reporter in assessing the sanctions. I'm talking about this is the underlying pattern.
If you want all these part of the record, you need to mark them, present them to court reporter. If you don't want them on the record, then you need to take them back. Anytime you want to be a record, you need to mark it.
Judge, I'm not concerned about the record. I want you to listen and hear me.
And
both ways, to be honest. I'm not a meanie. I don't think I am. But what I believe is at the bottom of this stuff is what the court reporter caught. Judge Banner, in assessing the sanctions, the court has taken into consideration that although Mr. Burma may be well-intentioned and may believe that he had some kind of real claim as far as RICO, there was nothing presented to the court in any proceedings since I've been involved that suggests he had any basis in law or in fact, and I can find something. He's fining me $62,000 for all the hads and has-beens. He can't do that. That was just one of the predicate acts, Your Honor, that makes up the RICO claim. That's a First Amendment retaliation for the predicate act is the violation of the civil rights, but it's not a civil rights case. It's a pattern of civil rights abuses. I'll mark him in a minute.
Thank you.
May I respond?
No, I'm not. Okay. So the issue we had was Forrester and White, what function was he performing at the time that he's claiming absolute immunity? And Harlow has today, did he violate? Forrester and White focus on the function, not the act. He can get outside of his authority, he can get excess. There's one case where a judge was upset about a lawyer and it told the bailiff to go get me a piece of him. And the bailiff beat him up. And the final ruling was, well, you know, yeah, that shouldn't happen, but the judge, the function he was performing was adjudicating. He wasn't in the function of beating up. He beat him up, or whatever it is, but the judge is immune because he was in the function of adjudicating. Forrester and White says we look at the function.
Weren't these judges in the function of adjudicating when they signed the order?
No.
No. Why weren't they?
They were punishing.
Is that a function if you...
No, sir. When you apply punishment, that is not adjudicating, Your Honor.
What is it?
Punishing. They saw this as punishment sought by the court for filing a lawsuit. That's punishing. They're not adjudicating anything. No adjudication, Your Honor. Okay, so we have Forrester and White that focuses on the function. Harlow focuses on the act, violating clearly statute. So we need to look at what we got over here, whether it violates either the Forrester or the Harlow. I say in my pleadings and my responses, there was no adjudication. There had been a final order issued in the courts. The case was through. And if anything, they were signed to recusal. The defendants, in both their pieces of papers and their affidavits, do not address the issue of whether the sanction hearing, the sanctions itself, was indeed adjudication. And even if they make no such statement. And even if they did, you have a controverted statement by me, Your Honor. We have contradictory evidence. There's no evidence for you to look at. The motion for the, let's come back to the motion here, Sadler. The motion for the absolute judicial immunity has to be done by a sworn motion. It wasn't sworn.
Aren't you asking me to retry that case?
Which case?
The one for the sanction.
No, I'm saying that his motion that he's got before your court today is improper because it's not sworn.
Well, please, the jurisdiction.
Yes, sir. That's what we're here for today. It was not sworn, and the affidavits say nothing about these matters.
Well, the affidavits are sworn.
But the motion's not, Your Honor.
Additionally, Your Honor, there's no authority which would require the judges or myself to have to swear to the plea of the jurisdiction. As the court has noted, the affidavits are sworn and signed and notarized. That is the evidence to be considered in connection with the grounds for the plea, which is judicial.
Objection, Your Honor. He said a lot of things that were not in the affidavit. This is just the whole issue. He puts all kinds of stuff in there, and he can't swear to it because he doesn't know it. And so we're here basically arguing about the berry bush or something. The second part of the thing is it's absolutely clear under the pleading to the jurisdiction. This has to be done before any answer or it's waived. The case law is clear on that, Your Honor. It's untimely. They tried the other stuff. Any plea to the jurisdiction has to be entered before or concurrent with an answer, or it is waived. I'm citing Civil Rule 120.
Additionally, Your Honor, subject matter jurisdiction is a matter of law, can never be waived, and it can even be challenged on appeal. That's Texas law, flat out, black letter law. Mr. Birnbaum is simply incorrect.
We're arguing personal jurisdiction.
You're arguing personal jurisdiction they're arguing subject matter jurisdiction. That can be brought up at any time. So the timing of this is possible. And I'll make the finding of that, but let's clear that out of hearing, because if you're claiming you're being sued in the wrong county, you've got to bring it first. If you're challenging the subject matter jurisdiction, that can be brought up at any time.
No.
Well,
just a minute. It's not on our subject. It has to do with that they're claiming absolute judicial immunity, and I'm quoting the Supreme Court that under Forrester and White, they were not in adjudication, therefore not entitled to it. Doesn't make any difference what Texas law is. Supreme Court says if they're not in adjudication, they can't. Forrester and White, if it's clearly established law, they can't. So look at the phrases that are in the... And I'm speaking off the cuff. They're in there, something. The punishment was, in one of them has sought by the court. The other one has which the court seeks. Judge, this is not adjudication. In fact, the court never seeks punishment. Have you ever sought punishment? Judge, you as a judge, have you ever sought punishment? The state seeks punishment. The court doesn't seek punishment. Okay, so it was not adjudication because it violates Forrester and White, and it was it has to be coercive, and it violates the law. Procedural Rule 120 says otherwise waived. I'm essentially saying that what they have in their affidavits in their motion is not complete. It's false, misleading, all kinds of other stuff, and I've sworn and counter to it. And there's issues of facts that need to be determined, just what these judges were doing. The documents speak themselves. I've also put in a motion for summary judgment. They have no evidence. I've asked them to...
I'm going to object to the plaintiff raising this motion for summary judgment that has not been properly set for hearing and is not... And therefore cannot be addressed today.
Yes, sir, it is. There's an objection to it before the court.
If you want a setting on something, all you've got to do is get a fiat signed. And the clerk has the ability to do it.
Don't we have a setting for the objections?
Which Mr. Birnbaum has never done to date. And I haven't seen any setting for hearing on his motion, purported motion for summary judgment.
Court only announced the plea of the jurisdiction. That's the only issue before the court.
Well, Judge, I'm asking you to set a discovery control plan.
I'm going to object to that request, Your Honor. Any matters regarding discovery also has not been set for hearing today. Mr. Birnbaum hasn't said anything today. What he's doing is coming up with all this other stuff to raise, which is improper before this court today. And I'm going to object to that.
I make my statement on that, and what I'm saying, I've counted. I'm saying that all he's saying is false. These are false statements. This is the pattern that's been going on. It's going on in your court right here, right now, and needs to be put a stop to it. You can what this issue is bigger than me. The issue is on the First Amendment. Is what does what these guys did? What does it do to a reasonable person to chill his access to the courts?
Your Honor, I'm going to object to this. This is re-argument. He's gone over this. I don't know how many times. First, he tells the court that he has brought a First Amendment claim. And then he says, well, I really didn't bring a First Amendment claim. Now he's coming back again and saying, well, yeah, under the First Amendment. I mean, this is getting ridiculous here. How many times do I hear Mr. Birnbaum make these crazy, wild, vague assertions and allegations which aren't supported by the pleadings? And I'm going to object to that.
Judge, the issue is not how crazy I can be. The Constitution gives you the right to be crazy and unreasonable. The issue is what these judges did, whether they would offend a reasonable person. I'm not even claiming...
I've allowed you to do a lot of things.
Thank you.
Now, that's over.
Okay.
You've got to act as an attorney today. Now, I'm going to hear your final position on the plea of the jurisdiction.
Just minutes. Pardon me. Just a minute. All right. This is that big file that I have. I'm not going to try to get in it. We have touched upon it before. My response is, as I have, this is the document that you looked at from August 12th, that search is not available for doing administrative functions, like a recusal hearing, not for doing unconditional fines sought by the court, not for doing it by civil process and punishing by civil process requires full criminal process, not for punishment to keep from filing, to keep me and others from filing, that's the First Amendment right, not 4 years after final judgment, that's the absence of all jurisdiction. Regarding their own words, I've gone through this, final judgment on the bottom page says, came to be heard. The award of punitive damages is an award, I'm putting the facts down, which sought by the court, which is to stop Bum Bum and others from filing. The other sanction is which the court seeks and others from filing. Then I have the thing that was in assessing the sanctions, they may have been well-intentioned, just I didn't see any evidence. Of course, it was a jury trial. The law is clearly established here. I have the law that I was looking for, Forrester and White. It is the nature of the function performed, adjudication, rather than the identity of the actor who performed it, a judge, that determines whether absolute immunity attaches. First Amendment, Sandra Day O'Connor. The second law was from the Texas Supreme Court. It says, however, absent extraordinary circumstances, a presiding judge's order appointing a judge to hear a recusal motion is administrative. There's the law, Your Honor. It simply transfers the power to decide the recusal motion to another judge. This all grew, the second half of it, it grew out of a recusal hearing. Incidentally, 2 years after final judgment, it grew out of a recusal hearing. You can't do that. The key words sought by the court, which the court seeks, I put in my little document that I called Happy April Fool's Day. I wrote that at that time. It gives lots of the details, the circumstance. But that's not all at issue. All at issue at this point is whether these guys were adjudicating. They were not adjudicating. They are not entitled to absolute judicial immunity. There was no adjudication. It was a recusal hearing. It was a screwy one at that. There was no case in there. Judge Banner coming to testify as a witness at a hearing for Chapman to hear whether he needed to be removed from the case. He signed final judgment 2 years before that.
Objection, Your Honor. There's no evidence of that.
Plain objection.
Judge, it's in their documents and the sanctions themselves. You read them. They made the... they came up with an answer, even made counterclaims, and we've gone over Rule 120. There's some details of what all crazy stuff lies under this. I'm not going to go into that. There are three judgments in the cases, Your Honor. Three judgments. I think two of them bearing interest. Something screwy. They were not adjudicating. I'm going to quote one of the things, Jason, that Mr. Contreras, that you quoted, and I have one of your quotes. It says, the actions complained that, I'm quoting from your motion and my response thereto.
What page?
This is my response on page 7. My response to your motion, plea to the jurisdiction. My page 7, got it? The bottom I have, number 2.
I have the title. How stupid do you think we are? The actions complained of, this is quoting you, the actions complained of are, without question, judicial acts under Brett. Although plaintiff claims there was nothing to adjudicate it, he requested adjudication through his motion to recuse.
If I were an attorney, I'd say objection form.
I'm not sure what his point is on that, Your Honor.
What? What?
I would object to that. And
of course, I don't allow argument before you counsel. So
sorry.
Okay.
Direct your argument.
Okay. The answer is, he's putting words in my mouth that I requested adjudication with a motion to recuse. That's what I'm talking about, the falsehoods. I don't put in a motion to recuse to request adjudication. Motion to recuse to get the judge off, if you know. All right, I have my answers here. It says, doing a recusal hearing is not adjudication. Stop digging yourself a bigger hole. You know, doing a recusal is not adjudication. Motion to recuse is not requested adjudication, it's to get the judge off. Judge Ron Chapman was signed only to do recusal, denied the recusal, then did not get off the bench to let Judge Banner, who was in the courtroom as a witness, to take over from there. But letting Judge Banner back on the bench 2 years after Banner had signed final judgment would have been just as crazy. Oh, what tangled webs we weave. Judge Ron Chapman, having been assigned solely to do a recusal, had no jurisdiction at all to hear sanctions in the case. The case was dead. A recusal hearing 2 years after final judgment, Your Honor? Crazy. Okay? 125,000 sanctions 4 years after final judgment? Crazy. Okay? Then we come back to the punitive sanctions. The affidavit of Judge Banner. I will quote the quote from Judge Banner. My rulings and orders made in the underlying lawsuit were the ones I normally make and perform in my capacity as judge, including the final judgment. Makes no mention of the $62,000 sanction that he did after that. Makes no mention of the finding that he made a year and a half after that. Makes no mention of the fine which the court seeks. Makes no mention that the final judgment said all other relief not expressly granted is denied. Makes no mention that it says this judgment rendered on the bottom of the order, making it a second judgment. I've got all kinds of listings in here, okay, which we've gone over. The documents themselves, it says this is something that the court seeks to punish Mr. Birnbaum. The court cannot punish me, Your Honor. This violates Harlow. They can put a contempt on me, but it has to be coercive. 125 unconditional sanction is not coercive, Your Honor. Violates Harlow. Violates clearly established law. I'm almost through. I have some more stuff. What, Judge, you almost have to read it. Forgive me for jumping over it like this. I try to construct it to be clear. And then I catch myself running my mouth. Yeah, Judge Chapman even found that my difficulties with judges have nothing to do with the conduct of the judges, as it is instead a delusional belief held only inside the mind of Birnbaum. Judge, that's a medical diagnosis, and if I were sick in the head, you don't punish me for it, okay? And he also says the award of exemplary punitive damages is an appropriate amount to seek to gain the relief sought by the court, which is to stop Birnbaum and others similarly like him from filing similar frivolous motions and other something. That was a conclusion of law? Judge, come on. Oh. Judge Chapman also doesn't mention that he was assigned to the Beaver Dam case. The affidavits don't say anything, and opposing lawyer says all kinds of stuff, which is hearsay at best. He doesn't swear to it, and he has, I dispute the facts. Judge, you've got nothing in front of you. The summary? It says, coming back to this unconditional, which the court seeks, is plumb unlawful. Then the other one, sought by the court, exemplary punitive, plumb unlawful by civil process. And to keep a citizen from filing in a court of law, that takes the cake. The first order violation of the First Amendment right. Violations of... No.
Objection, Your Honor. This is all rehashing the same thing he's been talking about. I don't
know. Bobby, five words.
Judge, I strongly urge you, what I've got in my pleadings, maybe not the exact words, to take judicial notice of the First Amendment and due process violations by Judge Banner and Judge Chapman, regardless of how you rule whether I have a cause over here.
I'm going to object to that, Your Honor. That's a totally absurd and inappropriate request.
Judge, I have the right to petition the government.
The only issue before the court at this time is the plea to the jurisdiction. That's the only thing.
Thank you. Okay. Your Honor, I'm through. And
thank you.
I thank you for indulgence and putting up with me.
Thank you. Take your seat.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I'll try to be much briefer, more brief here. Your Honor, the bottom line is, based on the law and based on the evidence presented, of course, which Mr. Birnbaum has selectively pointed to, but reading the affidavits in their entirety conclusively shows that these judges, the honorable and learned judges, Chapman and Banner, were acting within their judicial capacity. They had subject matter jurisdiction over their acts. Their orders and judgments in issue here occurred in the courtroom or in their chambers and were taken in their judicial capacity. Now, if Mr. Birnbaum had some evidence to controvert these affidavits, he could have conducted discovery over 2 years ago when he filed this lawsuit. He filed this lawsuit back in November of 06. 2 years pass, over 2 years, and he finally gets around to serving them because the case was going to get DWOP'd. He let the case sit there for 2 years. And now he's trying to say that he has some sort of evidence to create a fact issue. It is just ridiculous. He has presented no evidence other than his generalized, vague, unsupportable claims and allegations which would overcome judicial immunity, which they don't. He has no due process claim. I don't even know why he's talking about due process once again. That wasn't alleged in the pleadings, and that's not sufficient to overcome judicial immunity. Your Honor, based on legal judicial immunity does apply to bar any cause of action brought by Mr. Birnbaum against these judges. For those reasons, Your Honor, I would respectfully request that the plea be granted in its entirety, in this case dismissed with prejudice. And in that regard, Your Honor, may I approach with an order?
Court, having heard the request, is of the opinion the motion should be granted because the action is predicated on two orders signed by these judges in their judicial capacity. And I'll make the finding the fact that the refusal hearing is a judicial proceeding. So, court will grant the motion, plead the jurisdiction, and sign the orders as requested. Mr. Birnbaum? Would you like to ask how much these hearings cost the taxpayers of the state of Texas and Van Zandt County? You realize that I get paid for traveling down here and hearing this case from the taxpayers of your local county and the taxpayers of the state of Texas pay this young man over here to come in from Austin and hear this case? You realize that? The reason I'm going into this is you come back in here with some of this stuff. You're looking at a contempt proceeding by this court because of your frivolous filings. Now,
Your Honor, would that be...
I've heard you, and I've given you plenty of time to be heard. Now, if you're going to play lawyer, you've got to take responsibilities of being a lawyer, and that means no filing frivolous pleadings. You understand what I'm telling you? It's not a game.
Judge,
it's a very serious matter, and I've listened to you, and you're going to listen to me.
Judge, I request you put that on paper and sign it.
You request that I hold you in contempt and put it on paper?
No, I request that the instructions that you're giving me, you give to me in written.
That's why we have a court report in it. Everything. So I'm telling you, if you come back in here, through frivolous pleas, you're looking at a potential punishment up to 6 months confinement and up to a $500 fine. And I think I have the ability to hold you in contempt at this particular time, but I'm not going to do it because you appear to be a nice person. But you're misguided. You're wasting county taxpayers' money. You're wasting the state of Texas' money. It needs to be spent on other things. Now, you understand what I'm telling you? Now, if you want me to come down on you, I'll come down on you and give you something to appeal. And you can appeal it from jail, sir. Because this is serious business. This isn't a game. Now, you know that a judge signing an order is a judicial action.
It can also be unlawful.
Then you had the right to appeal it, and you didn't appeal it, and you got a reversal. So put it to bed. If you get me back down here, you're going to make me mad. And that's on the record. Because there's no use in spending state money on this kind of frivolous action. Now, you understand
me? I hear you.
Okay. I'm sure you've got a life to live. I've got a life to live. You don't need this kind of stuff. These judges made a ruling. They didn't prevent you from appealing that ruling. They didn't stand in your way.
They did. There was no case. But anyhow.
I've heard what you said. But legally, there was an enforceable order signed by a judge. You've got a right to appeal it. It didn't stand in your way. You've got appellate courts. It's over. Now, if you try to resurrect it again, I've given you a warning that you're going to be treated as is any other attorney. If an attorney brought this kind of stuff, they would get sanctioned by the Bar Association. My job as judge is to hear a case and in the proper situation to hold people in contempt for frivolous pleadings. And that's not just a monetary sanction, that's a jail sanction. So if you continue to do this, you better bring your toothbrush to the next hearing unless you have some real good law. You understand what I'm telling you?
I hear you.
All right. Good luck, T.C. Court sign orders for presentation.
Thank you, Judge.